Hello and welcome to Pulled Up, the podcast where we talk to Coral Springs High School teachers about the movies that pulled them up so they can come in and pull up our students every single day. My name is Russell Arrington. I am the media studies teacher and the Cambridge program coordinator here at Coral Springs High School. And on the cameras and on the boards, we have Mr. John Plates with our TV production program. And our guest for this episode is Mr. Brian Ardila. Welcome, Mr. Ardila.
Thank you. And can I tell you, you have an announcer's voice, which is awesome.
Thank you very much.
It's sick.
Thank you very much. My father said I could sell chicken McNuggets to Colonel Sanders. All right. So I want to begin by just kind of introducing you. All right. So you are in your second year teaching band, right? And you played with the Miami Heat band.
Yes.
You played with Miami Marlins drumline. Several New Orleans brass bands, which I'm going to want to build on that at some point later. And Kumpa bands as well. And I'm going to want to ask you about that.
Cool.
All right. You've done some celebrity work and recording, and you know we're going back up, and we're going to get to that as well. And you're a sponsored saxophone player for the Growling Sax.
Great.
All right. So before we kind of build up on all that stuff, you said in your bio that you first got into band when you were 18 or so.
Officially. Yeah. So I was always part of the band program since I was 12.
Oh, okay.
It was something that my family recommended I should do, and I did. And I wasn't really bought in maybe until around 17, 18 years old when I was like, I want to pursue this for my life at the moment.
Tell me about that. Like, where were you? First of all, where were you on this when you bought in?
Okay. So to tell before where I bought in, I started at 12 years old under the direction of Anthony Williams, who was at Pines Middle School at the time.
Okay.
And what an incredible band director he was. And he was great. He made me love band, and I'm going to continue to stay in band with my friends. You know, and that was, you know, a main reason. Then I went to high school, to Flanagan High School, under the direction of Steve Rivera and Ed Mena.
Okay.
Which were two, in my opinion, the two best band directors to walk in South Florida. I mean, they were just unbelievable. And, you know, Ed Mena, specifically, he was a saxophone player, and he, you know, taught me how to just become a better musician and to learn to appreciate life a little bit more. And I think it was at around the 17-year-old mark where I realized, like, if this man is doing this for me and Mr., you know, Steve Rivera was doing this for me, I can do this for other people, you know, and I pursued it from there.
All right, and then you went to college where?
I first started as a jazz studies major at the University of North Florida.
Okay.
And then I ended up transferring over to FIU to finish with a music ed degree.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And at that point, you always knew you were going to be teaching band, or you hadn't decided on that yet? What happened?
Well, I originally, it's a little funny story. I told him I wanted to be a jazz studies major. I love jazz music. I love just old school stuff. You know, as much as the new school stuff, I love the old school stuff. And I remember telling him, I want to pursue a degree in jazz performance. And he was a jazz performance major, and he was one of the best I've ever heard. And he looks at me, he goes, ha, good luck, man. I played up. And I went over there and I loved it. Don't get me wrong. But I realized that I had taken a part-time job over, at the time, I think it was Cypress Bay. And I was, you know, teaching their marching band little by little, just kind of learning how to get into the ropes as a side gig. And then I realized in that experience that I just loved it, you know, and I made the immediate switch.
What did you like about it?
Human interaction is one of the best things that we can have as people.
Okay.
And there's just something about the emotion that band brings you. And I always say this, band isn't always about the good days. It's about the bad days too. But those bad days really shape up your good days.
I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things I was going to follow up with is, you've only been teaching 2 years, but you've probably had some good days and some bad days. So since you said that, can you tell me, and I haven't prepared him for this before, can you tell me about a bad day and how that made you better?
When I took this job last year, this is a very stressful time to take a band director job in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
We have what's called MPA, Music Performance Assessments.
Okay.
Which we're preparing, and I had to come in and, you know, on top of trying to recover maybe some of the stuff from the fall semester, and I had taken the job, you know, just making sure everything's on track. I had to prep our bands to get ready to go to the music performance assessment. So the way that I put it is that when you have a director that has one ideology and another director that comes in with another ideology, it tends to be very, very difficult. So when you're working with that on top of the paperwork, on top of the score studying, because you have to look at the scores and you have to understand what you're teaching, on top of the rehearsal parts, there's those days, you know, there was a day where I'd be in my office and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is too much for any man to bear.
Yeah.
You know, and it would, I would have to tell the students some days, like, hey, go off into sectionals, which means just play with your section. I need the office to catch up on work. And on those days, I'd be super stressed out. And I would have my mother just kind of tell me, she's like, look, you can only do things one day at a time. Stop trying to get it all done in one day.
You hear that, kid's sage advice. And I think that's so funny because I think every teacher has had that story. You've had that day early on where you're just like, I don't know if I can keep doing. See, and even the time, like, it is rare for students to understand the prep that goes into it. So, like, tell me a little bit about that prep you do with the school. So I think that's kind of interesting.
So what I'll say, the life of a musician is a great life because it's exciting. You know, there's always something new to play or something new to do. But it's a life that is very taxing on the time. So while some people may have the luxury to clock out at 2:40, some days I won't leave till 7:30, 8 p.m., whether it's rehearsal, score studying, like you're talking about specifically. I'll take home my scores and I have to look at them and see what these scores, you know, what the music is, you know, what's happening in the music. And then from there, I have to be very analytical of, what is something in this music that my students don't know that I have to teach? Because it's not just notes, you know. Sometimes we're playing in an odd key that maybe my students aren't familiar with that key. And, okay, let's warm up our scales that day with our key. Or maybe it's just a musical passage, or maybe it's a double-tonguing thing where it's something really, really fast. And I have to be, in my mind, how do I prepare them to play really, really, really fast or use a lot of their tongue for their articulation? So a lot of that time kind of just goes into reading, seeing what I need to teach them that they don't know.
And that's all that, starting with the end in mind, right? So you're sitting here and they're thinking, okay, I know where I got to get. And then you have to plan all those steps along the way to get to that point. And I think very often a lot of our students think that we're just kind of coming in and winging it. And they don't realize that we do that kind of prep. And that's why we're trying to teach them to do that kind of prep, because that's where the quality comes from, right?
And I, you know, when I come in to rehearse a part, I don't come in rehearsing top to bottom because excess information is a bad thing.
Okay. Yeah. Build on that. Talk to me about that.
There's only so much that I believe a person can retain in one day that it would be useless on my end to overprepare them versus taking small chunks and really defining, you know, and when the next rehearsal comes, if it's not as defined as it was when I left that rehearsal, I must go back and make sure I get what I want from my sounds and my program, and then I must move to the next thing. So it's easier for me to move one step at a time, because the way I put it is, it's not just a couple scores. I currently take three ensembles to MPA, each of which have to play three tunes. So I'm looking at nine different scores, okay, which is very, very hard to keep up with some days. So sometimes I have to look at a score with like 20 minutes, find what I can find, teach what I can teach, and just go.
Right, you know? Right. Sometimes you get the luxury of that prep, and sometimes you do the best you can. Yep.
And I just think it's a reality. And I know the kids, you know, have the same thing. Sometimes you prep all this thing, and then maybe that day we're not working that section.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, okay. So I'm working on my end to improve. And like, okay, hey, our next rehearsal, we're touching this, you know, this part of the music. I need you to go back and practice this. So then when I get to the rehearsal, all I have to do is put pieces together and put little details on things.
All right. So I'm only going to ask you one more question in this part, okay, because we've already started, while we were preparing, we've already started talking about the movie.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to get a lot deeper than I expected it to. So since I asked you about the hardest day, can you pick out a moment that re-energized you?
I feel very blessed to know that I have students that really do appreciate me.
And there was, I think there was a day that I was just so in the dumps, and I had lent one of my students my sweater. This was recently, within this semester.
Okay.
And I let her use my sweater. My band room is like 40 degrees, man. Like it's ridiculous. And I get back the sweater and I just put my hands in my jacket because it's cold. And I pull out a letter, that she put in the sweater just saying, thank you, you know, for letting me use this. And so it's like in a bad day, something like that is just enough to pull me back.
Come on. That's fantastic.
It's awesome.
So, you know, and that's the sort of thing that I think keeps all of us going.
Yeah.
And outside of what we do, people can have these negative ideas about, especially about kids.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a story like that. And everybody's got a bunch of those stories. And that's mm-hmm. why I love hearing them.
Yeah, man.
And that's why we're here, man.
Yeah, we do it for them.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, it's always been for them, so.
Yeah. So then we're going to make this transition here. We're going to do a quick music break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about Christopher Nolan's 2020 film.
Let's go.
Tenet.
Let's go.
Back in a sec. And we're back with Mr. Ardila, and we are talking about the film he chose when I asked him, what's a film that pulls you up? And I was very surprised when he picked Christopher Nolan's 2020 misunderstood film, Tenet. And I'm going to geek out a little bit before we talk. I want to give everybody some background, partially because you should know a little bit about the film, mm-hmm. and partially because I am a Cambridge Media Studies teacher, and we all hope you're thinking about taking Cambridge Media Studies, mm-hmm. where we study film and make films. So we learn a little bit more about that. So we've got Christopher Nolan, director. He made a couple of those Batman films that people may have heard of, right? And this crazy new Oppenheimer film that's up for, you know, 12 Oscars.
Only 12.
Yeah, something like that. And Dunkirk, which was one of my favorite recent theater experiences, which was great. I'm an old school Nolan fan, so I love Memento and Prestige, but we were talking before the recording, and everybody in the room is a big fan of the Prestige, and well, you should be.
You should be, yes.
So for Tenet, the cinematographer is Hoyt van Hoytema, and the reason why I saw that name and freaked out is because he's also the cinematographer of Nope. Really? Jordan Peele's Nope, yeah.
That was a great movie, too.
Yeah, yeah, and especially for the visuals, right? And also, I fell in love with this guy years ago. One of his first films, he's a Dutch cinematographer, and he made a film called Let the Right One In. And it was remade here in America. Don't bother with that. Find the Dutch original. And it's a film about this teenage girl and teenage boy, and one of them is a vampire. And kids, it ain't Twilight, and you want to see it. It's a really cool film. I also wanted to kind of highlight the editor, Jennifer Lane. First of all, I want to point out that about 60% of the editors who are nominated for Oscars are women, whereas less than 5% of the cinematographers in Hollywood total are women. And that's interesting because the editors are the super logical thinkers, right? They're the ones who are reining in the director and kind of keeping the director focused and saying, you got to make the story work. You got to make the story work. And in a film like Tenet, when I watched this, I was like, how do you edit this film?
Mm-hmm.
And this woman also edited Oppenheimer. She also did Hereditary and Midsommar. And so when I was watching this, I'm like, okay, yeah, I get it. Obviously, we have John David Washington playing protagonist.
Oh, yes. No name.
Who I, you know, was like, saw Black Klansman and then just went nuts. Mm-hmm. We have Robert Pattinson, who we both agree this might be his best work, actually.
Yes.
And we'll get back around to that. Oscar Best Effects 2020. This film was 20 years in development. Script took 5 years to make. And when you watch it, you know why. We will get to the music because I think that's obviously going to be a big part of what we're talking about. But tell me a little bit about why you chose Tenet.
Tenet is a weird movie. And I, you know, for anybody that hasn't seen it, you got to go see it because you'll agree. And I think a lot of directors, they write with the end in mind, you know, and I think Tenet's a special case because it writes with the beginning and the end in mind because they work back and forth. So, like, I guess I could talk about the movie. Spoiler, right?
I'm going to say right now, spoiler alert, we will talk about other elements in the film. So if you haven't seen it, as of this recording, it is being re-released in theaters because of Oppenheimer. So you can catch it there. You can rent it. And actually, you'll probably have to watch it a couple times to figure out what's going on anyway. So it is a mild spoiler alert. Okay, spoiler alert. And go.
Yeah, so the movie... It's very strange because one part of it is operating in the present time moving forward, and the other half of it is operating in the past moving backwards, or the future, I'm sorry, future moving backwards.
Right.
So it, you watch that, and I think one of the first things that stuck out to me why I chose Tenet is the choreography of the movie. How do you write somebody that moves in a normal way the way we move and then write somebody moving backwards?
Yeah.
And I looked into it myself. Instead of what you would think people do is they would film the forward and then they would edit it to the backwards. They taught them how to, you know, fight and how to move as if they were in rewind.
Yes.
Which is really, really cool. You know, it's like a little attention to detail that we talked about. And there's a section where there's a, like a little bullet hole and there's a gun. And instead of shooting the gun, the bullet comes back into the gun. And it's just little details that like that, that stuck out for me in the movie, like, oh, this is very, very new. This is a risk. You know, we were talking about risks earlier, just risk with the movies.
We'll get back to that, definitely, but yeah.
And I, right there, I was like, oh, I'm sold. You know, just the idea and the boldness of the idea and the execution of the idea, I thought was enough for me to pick this movie.
And I like the fact that you're talking about the boldness and the execution, because it kind of gets to what we've already been talking about with teaching too, and what we will get into obviously in just a minute with music as well. You've got to have the creativity, but you have to put in all the work that goes with that creativity. Yeah. The creativity alone just doesn't get you there. Yeah. And with this film, if you didn't have the work, I mean, it's hard enough to understand with both. If he wasn't completely in control, if all of these people weren't completely in control of their craft, I can't even imagine what you would have wound up with, right? Correct. And I was watching some of the stuff too. And so they have, they're doing fight sequences where people are moving backwards. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they have to tell people, run backwards. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing if I tell you run backwards and you're like, okay, it's like I'm training for, you know, football or something like that. And I've got to run backwards. No, you have to run backwards like you're running forwards. What? Mm-hmm. You know? And so, and sometimes he would do that and then reverse it so that it, you could see how hard it was for the protagonist to run forward in a world where everything was going
backwards
around him. Mm-hmm. So it's supposed to look difficult. So I love the fact that you pointed that out. Were there other other aspects of it that
keep
coming back?
There was just, you know, the attention to detail in the timeline. And if you've ever seen a Christopher Nolan movie, Christopher Nolan does not operate from point A all the way to point B. Sometimes he'll start at point B, he'll go to point D, he'll come back to A, he'll go to C, he'll come back to A, he'll come back to B. And it's I think it's a really great creative choice to kind of keep the viewer in a position of what's going on. It kind of reminds me of old school cinema. Because back then, trailers were, you know, not really a thing. You go and you saw the movie for the first time.
Yeah.
And you were like, whoa, like you didn't expect anything that was going to happen. In my opinion, trailers nowadays show everything.
Oh, it's a huge problem with trailers.
So I look at Christopher Nolan's movies as you never know what's coming next, because he intentionally uses the timeline to his advantage. So instead of like, oh, you know, we need to go to the car and then we need to do this and then we need to do that, they'll end up at the spot already and then they'll backtrack all the way to here and then they'll go past where they originally were and then the middle section comes in and it all connects.
It's so weird because like cinematography is in music, film, any other art, it's rare that the best way is the straight line.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be the fastest way, but certainly is known as the most interesting way, right? So I love that. And that kind of gets me to the music. And as I was listening, as I was watching the film, especially in the last big sequence, I'm listening to music. I'm like, wait a second. So now the music, I've heard this before. So the music is designed so it works the same way in either direction. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and we got to speak about this a little earlier. Just, it's a very strange concept where if you had a person running from point A to point, you know, and some person running from point B, and there's that section just where they overlap and it's together, and then all of a sudden they're past each other. And the music does that, you know, in a couple of cases. And the music sometimes is very, I've realized this about Christopher Nolan movies, okay? The music's very pattern-based.
Okay.
Which is really great because I think pattern-based stuff is very mechanical and it's not a bad thing. I think, you know, if you watched Oppenheimer, the theme, can you hear the music? It's a great masterpiece to what is going on in Oppenheimer's mind, which is structure, formula, repetition, structure, formula, repetition, structure, formula, repetition. The music's going, and you're like, oh, he's putting his mind into this. So Christopher Nolan and Tenet, you know, and the composer just, they work to figure out those little descriptive elements of the movie where, you know, maybe something is very, very lax, but you feel, you know, something's about approaching the movie, like a horror movie, when you know a jump scare is about to happen, except the audio is coming in reverse, meaning like somebody from the future is on its way backwards to you, which I think is a really, really neat element.
So that music's acting as that foreshadowing, and it's already set up because you've heard this theme before. Mm-hmm. And it's just the same thing. It's really no different than you hear bum, bum, ba, bum, bum, ba, bum, and you're like, oh, okay, Darth Vader's here, but taken up to 11.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
And it makes you as an audience work a little bit more, and it lets you discover.
Yes.
And I thought that was really cool. Yeah. And that kind of sent me down a rabbit hole. I was looking up the composer, Ludwig Göransson, who did Mandalorian, who did the Black Panther theme, yeah. Took an Academy Award home for that one. Mm-hmm. And I was watching an interview with him. He was talking about retrograde compositions and all these classical musicians who created music that did exactly what you're talking about. And one of the most famous cases that people thought for a while was Mozart, and apparently now they're saying it wasn't Mozart, I don't know, was it would have two violinists playing right across from each other, and they were reading the same sheet of music, but it didn't have a top. It read the same way in either direction. And so if I'm playing, you're playing the mirror opposite of it. So you'd be playing the upside down, backwards notes. And as they get closer, they harmonize. Mm-hmm. And it's just like you were talking about. We're in the middle. All of a sudden, you get this crescendo, and that creates an emotional response.
Yes.
And to see both that music and that kind of mathematical thing going on in the film, I just thought that was really cool,
and
too.
I'm a big Christopher Nolan fanboy. I don't know if I already said that, but...
About eight or nine times. But I think it's okay.
It's all good.
Yeah, you know?
I think it's just his choice, and not only his choice, but the people he chooses around him are everything to his, you know, his works. Because at the end of the day, it is, you know, his movie was his idea, and he pitched it. But, you know, I can only imagine that Christopher Nolan can only know so much about music. I'm sure I know, you know, he knows what he wants, but he needs to know somebody who can make it happen, you know?
Absolutely.
Ludwig Göransson, you know, just he was the guy for that. And Christopher Nolan's used Hans Zimmer plenty of times.
He wanted Hans Zimmer, but Hans Zimmer was doing Dune. Mm-hmm. And so he had to find another guy. Yeah, I know. Yeah. We could do a whole nother hour on that.
Yeah.
And the reason why I like what you're saying now is it goes back to what we're always talking about in media studies, which is, and it's true of band as well, it's a collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. You can't just go out there and do it all by yourself. You need to work with other people, and you can't cover everything because it's all too complex.
Yes.
And that's why you have a cinematographer, an editor, and you get this specialization.
Yeah.
Because you need to rely on the knowledge and the effort and the creativity of other people.
And I think, you know, I think there's a stigma that you got to do everything yourself, you know, and it's a little unhealthy because you realize the most successful companies can't operate without a team.
Right.
You know, and I think we need to pitch teamwork, especially to our, you know, our modern day, you know, younger students, that teamwork has always been everything. You know, one guy did not build the pyramids or the Aztec ruins, or that took a lot of people to make something like that happen, obviously under different circumstances, but
right.
it still took people to make it happen, you know. And you want to, when you're looking at a creative project like Tenet, a very complex creative project, you really need some bright minds.
Yeah, and and all the people that you see in Tenet, they're not digital. I mean, when you see the big action scenes at the end, you're coordinating literally hundreds of people running around, and you have to keep track of, because some of them have red armbands, some have blue armbands. You got to keep track of who's going forward, who's going backward, and it all has to match. And you're shooting on film, not digital. You're shooting on film, and that's IMAX. And I looked it up before I got here. To shoot and develop 1 minute of IMAX film is $1 million.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is why another reason why these films are so expensive. Christopher Nolan still shoots on old school film. And IMAX is $1 million a minute. Minimum. So it just – and I think you're right. I think sometimes in our society we've gotten this thing where you want to say, okay, here I am. This is my moment. I'm going to show you. And I'm going to show you what I can do. And that ego is great and that skill is great, but that's just not how it works, including all the things that have to happen for you to have that moment. All the people who had to do all this different stuff for you to have that moment.
Correct.
So, and I think that's a great place to.
It's even the workplace, you know?
Yeah.
I am nothing without my band.
Right.
And I have to
hear that, kids.
Nothing without my band. And it goes vice versa.
Yeah.
You know? And you really have to understand that it is a team effort. I'm always pitching it, you know? Hey, everybody, put all your chairs and stands back together. And they're like, I put my chair back away. And it's like, go help that person. Go help. Go be nice. You know? It's not just me telling you to go do something, go do something. I really want to instill that we turn back into a helping community, a community that serves others. You know,
I love that.
So it applies even that kind of thing into my classroom, where I know no matter what, I'm giving what I can out of my instruction, but I need a musician to play what I'm asking for. I can't conduct nobody.
Right. Well, I think that makes a great transition. So what we're going to do is going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back to student questions.
Okay.
Because your students have some questions for you.
Yes.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. And we're back for a few questions for Mr. Ardila from his students.
Oh, yeah.
Are you ready?
No.
But, okay.
You know, well, let's do it.
All right. So this question is from Robert Ross.
Okay.
Who asked you, did you ever learn your scales on the French horn?
Robert, I learned 3 scales on the French horn in 10 minutes. So if I can do it in 10 minutes, you could do it in a couple of years. You could do all 12 in a couple of years.
Challenged.
Oh, yeah. I'm that kind of guy in my band program.
All right. That's good. Let's see here. So what is your favorite one piece? Oh, I'm sorry. This is from Tyler Eugene. What is your favorite one piece arc?
Okay. For those that don't know me, just before I'm going to make this quick. I love One Piece. Okay. I got a giant poster in my office and everything. I have a tattoo of One Piece right here, okay? The greatest One Piece arc might be this current arc right now, but for a finished arc has to be Sabaody. If you know, you know. You know, that's one of those.
All right, so let the debate begin. Do you agree with Mr. Ardila about his favorite One Piece arc?
I'm always right. You have to.
And if you're gonna have to back it up with evidence, right?
I will.
Yeah, and they are too.
Oh, yeah.
They are too. From Vincent Hanlon. Uh-oh. He's laughing. What do you think of podiums?
Backstory, I fell 6 feet through a podium in marching season with one of our students and one of our staff members because the weight, I guess, gave out and collapsed. We were about 6.5 feet through the air. So I don't like podiums, you know? So that's a Little backstory.
That's some good backstory there, man. You risk life and limb for these kids.
I love band. All right, let me put it like.
And we have one more question. This is from Gabriella Charles. How's your back?
Yes. So that ties exactly to the podium story.
Yeah, I figured.
I fell directly on my lower back. Directly on my lower back, but by the grace of everything that is good. I was able to quite literally walk it off. I didn't walk for like the next day and a half. Don't get me wrong. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it was painful, but I walked it off after that. So we're good.
All right. So those are our questions. So the way I'd like to end up with is there anything in your classroom, in your work outside of the classroom, or even personally that you want to promote?
Yes, actually, I have a business, guys. So we're going
to. You have a business.
I have a business. On top of already being a full-time band director, therapist, you know, all of the above, whatever rolls into that entitled, you know, that position.
Okay.
I have a music academy business. So if you ever want to learn how to play an instrument privately or through any of my current, you know, employees, feel free. It is Musica, M-U-S-I-Q-A. And your first lesson is free.
And your first lesson is free. You should have like a code, like mention this code. So you come up with a code now.
I can't do this.
Oh, okay.
You got it.
Tenet.
Tenet. Use code Tenet.
Yes. Use code Tenet and receive your first lesson free. Okay.
She sounds way cooler when you do it.
Oh, well, thank you. I'll be here all week.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. There we go. So I'm going to thank everybody, but first I want to thank you for coming out, man. This was a lot of fun.
Agreed.
I'm good, because I was hoping you had a lot of fun. Yeah. And this is our first episode. And other than Mr. Place, I have no idea what I'm doing. He does, but I don't, and you don't. So I think overall that went pretty well for that. I'm going to read the fine print on this. So this has been pulled up. A co-production of the ACE Media Studies Program and the Colts TV Production Program. Special thanks to Mr. Plays for producing the show in this dynamite podcast studio that we have here. I want to give Dr. King thanks for helping me develop the podcast and for her sage wisdom and support. I want to thank retired principal Vivian Suarez for greenlighting this and current new principal, Mr. Dixon, for re-greenlighting it again. Having the support is really important. Right now, this is just green paper, but there is a podcast logo coming, and it was designed by ACE Media students Brendan Kenny and Vanessa Ramshaw.
Let's go, Brendan.
Yeah, man. Finally, you didn't. Finally, we'd like to thank the faculty, staff, and administration at Coral Springs High School for pulling up students every day. Until next time, thank you for listening, and remember, no matter where you go, there you are. Bye.
Look!